What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and in today's episode, we're going to be diving into the Wizards' projected rotation for the 2025-26 season. I'm going to be giving you my projected starters, rotation pieces, some guys like AJ Johnson that might not see the floor as much as some Wizards fans might hope in the beginning of the season. Kind of talk about how the rotations are going to work, who will play, who won't, and some storylines there. So we'll dive into that. But I also want to touch on some more newsy things like Marcus Smart and Blake Wesley, how much they decided to give back, some things to look forward to, schedule release, that kind of stuff. So maybe a shorter pod, but definitely wanted to come on here because I've been getting a lot of questions. You know, Greg, who do you think starts for the Wizards next season come opening night? Greg, who do you think makes that 8-9-man rotation? And so I felt the need to kind of hop on here and record a pod kind of dissecting all of that. So without further ado, I made a little infographic, and bear with me because obviously if you're listening to this, you won't be able to see it, but if you're on YouTube, you will. So I'll try to do a good enough job to articulate what I'm saying for those of you just listening that can't see it. But I put together, I'm going to add it right now, a bit of an infographic that kind of lays out the depth chart for the Wizards as of now, at least how I see it. Again, you feel free to let me know how you agree or disagree with some of the stuff that I'm saying. But to begin with, I want to start with who I think the Wizards will throw out there as their starting five to begin the season. I'm just going to say right now that this is subject to change. Obviously, a lot can be unfolded in training camp. But I think come opening night, the Wizards are going to roll with a backcourt of Bob Carrington and CJ McCollum. They're going to have Chris Middleton at the four. They're going to have Alex Saar at the five. And I believe that they will go with Bilal Coulibaly at the three. I'll start with the backcourt, right? I think this is one of the couple of the positions in the starting five that I'm more confident in. Again, I'd be very surprised if they don't go with Bob Carrington as their lead guard in that starting lineup, especially when, you buy Marcus Smart out, who is presumably going to be an option for you at the backup point guard position. I didn't think he would start, but certainly could have possibly been an option there. But with him bought out, obviously Blake Wesley, who was another guard, he was also bought out, and you don't have many true point guard options on this team. You know, it's clear they started above a point guard in summer league. Down the stretch last year, they played him a lot actually at the lead guard position. He played both in college. I think he can play point guard. He can also play off ball too at the two, but it seems pretty apparent to me based on some of their actions in the last couple of months that they view Bob Carrington as a point guard, and they view him as the lead guard, at least entering this season. So with that said, plus the fact that Smart was bought out, Wesley's gone, there's not many other options really at point guard. It seems pretty clear that Bob starts. I think if you watched him in summer league, you certainly are right to have maybe some reservations early on. But I'll remind you, like, he, by the time I'm recording this, has been 20 years old for a day. He just turned 20. He's very young, and he is still clearly growing in that role. He played a lot of, off-ball minutes last year when he was playing alongside Poole. Then when Poole was hurt a couple of the games or towards the end of the season, played a lot more on ball. So there's going to be a transition there. He's still going to be figuring out, what is the right read here off the pick and roll? Who's open when I can I find this skip pass or how can I basically navigate and run Brian Keefe's offense? That's what he's going to have to figure out. And there's going to be growing pains, obviously, as there is with most young point guards in this league. But again, he's only entering his second year. I did, there were some bad moments in summer league, but there were also some high moments too. There were some times where I really did like some of the reads he made, especially as a young guard. So I urge Wizards fans to be patient with Bob. Obviously wins aren't at the forefront. He's clearly viewed very highly by this front office as a possible solution at the point guard position moving forward. So I think that I'm pretty confident going with Bob at the one, and the McCollum pairing at the two. Like, I'm the only flack I might receive for this is people who say, well, Trey Johnson was just picked number six. He's a true scoring two guard. He was really good, nearly 20 points per game on 58% from the field, 45% from three in summer league in two games, looked the part. Why are the Wizards starting a 33-year-old CJ McCollum over, you know, your 19-year-old rookie in Trey Johnson if wins aren't, you know, what you desire? I understand that philosophy, but I'm sorry to report that's just not how the league works. It's not how the Wizards have operated throughout this rebuild. Just because a guy is over 30 years old doesn't mean they're just not going to play on this team because they maybe won't be here for the foreseeable future. Like the Wizards aren't necessarily putting all their chips in the center to win games, but they're still going to try to compete. They're still going to try to put the best lineup and best rotations forward, especially early on in the season. And I think that has been reflected in previous years. I mean, you obviously had, you know, Jonas Valanciunas playing pretty hefty minutes, even though they knew they'd trade him at some point. And they could have been playing Tristan Vukcevic, but said, you know what? We need him to develop in the G League. Valanciunas is the better option. We're going to play him. You saw it when Landry Shamet would play a lot. Tyus Jones would play a lot, even though you had younger players that could step into some of those roles. You know, Chris Middleton started every game after he came over at the deadline last year, despite being very old and it being a later part in the year. Marcus Smart, when he was healthy, played a decent bit. So I think, you know, as much as Wizards fans would like to see the young players start and play big minutes, and I'm one of those people, like, obviously you want to see that. I would urge them to be patient, because that's going to happen later in the season and obviously in years to come. But they want to put together the best lineups forward, because obviously I think that also helps development. You know, if you see Detroit, it's I always mention them. Like, you had a team of just young players and nobody got better. Same with Houston. You insert some veterans into those lineups, some young guys are going to get pushed out of the rotation, but all the other guys are going to benefit from playing better basketball with better players, better teammates, in a better, more cohesive unit, more and a better system. And so, yes, I understand Trey Johnson is the two guard of the future. I wouldn't be surprised if at some point this season he is the starting shooting guard for the Wizards. But I would be very surprised if he starts opening night above a guy like CJ McCollum, who is a career 20-plus point-per-game scorer, averaged 21 last year on the Pelicans, which, again, is a similar roster, a similar dynamic where, I mean, they weren't destined to tank like the Wizards were, but they did because they had so many injuries. And McCollum was healthy for a decent part of the season, still averaged 20-plus a game on good shooting splits. Again, I think he'll be a pretty good piece for Johnson to learn from and learn behind. And I think he'll start learning from the bench from McCollum, who I think will be starting alongside Bub Carrington. Now, I'm going to touch again. The starting small forward position is kind of that's the meat on the bone. Like, that's where I think a lot of people are going to be up in arms or going to have the strongest opinion. I'm going to save that to last, respectfully, for the starting lineup, because I have a lot to say about that, and move forward to some of the more, I believe, easier spots. You're moving down in order, I guess, to power forward. I have Chris Middleton slotted in there, again, acquired at the deadline last year in that Kyle Kuzma trade. Obviously, the Wizards made that trade, you know, in part, obviously, to get Middleton to make the contracts work. But AJ Johnson was the real piece in that. There's the pick swap dynamic as well. But at the same time, you know, Middleton, I believe he's 33 as well. Again, probably not part of the future in Washington, but still somebody that a lot of the forwards, the wings on this team can learn from. He's a mid-range assassin, has been it in the league for you know, a decade plus, and has put together a really solid career after not being, you know, the most highly touted prospect. I believe he was a second-round pick of Detroit and spent some time there, got traded to Milwaukee, was kind of an afterthought in that move, and obviously won a title with the Bucks, made some big, big, big-time shots throughout the playoffs, including the NBA Finals. So this is still a guy that has game. He played very well for the Wizards. In 14 games, they were very well might be a stretch. He played well for the Wizards. 14 games last year after the deadline, the Wizards were 6-8, which for most teams isn't good, but for the Wizards is a dramatic improvement. I mean, that's like Middleton was there for 14 games, and he's responsible for being part of the lineup for a third of Washington's wins. Like, that's a pretty unique and noteworthy stat. I think clearly the team plays better with him on the floor. Not saying that he's the reason, but when a guy contributes to that many wins on a team that otherwise didn't win many games, you have to look at that stat. But I certainly did like what I saw from Middleton, steady veteran. Again, Smart might have gone balled out, $20 million, but at 33, good luck trading or finding a buyout with Middleton, unless it's late in the season. He's like, hey, I'll give back some money. I'm just going to make it back with whatever team I sign with. You never know. But again, I think he'll be here the whole season. It's a pretty tough contract to trade. And I think while he's here, he will start a majority of the games, especially early on in the season. Maybe they shut him down towards the end to let some other guys get some minutes. But you know, Middleton, and for all people say about, you know, I think he'll come off the bench and stuff. I'll just like note, he came over after the deadline when the Wizards were obviously far, far out of the playoff picture, you know, basically in sort of tank mode. And he started every single game, all 14 games Middleton played for Washington after the deadline, he started. That's another noteworthy stat to consider when thinking about how they might utilize him. Will they start him? Will they not? I think he's a pretty good lock to be part of that starting lineup. Whether they play him at the three or the four, I'm not sure. Pretty interchangeable to me. But at the same time, I think I'm pretty confident that they'll go with Middleton, that starting lineup. And then at the five, you got Sarr. It's, you know, I know a lot of people view Alex Sarr as a four. Maybe down the line, that's what he is if they get a competent center that plays well with him. I do know that in the minutes that they played him alongside a center with Valanciunas last year, it was a disaster. Spacing was terrible. Switchability on defense was terrible. Just not good on either end. And so it's clear that Washington wants to at least try it as much as they can to play him at the five. Again, not many options there really for the Wizards at the center position. It's not like anybody's competing with their former number two pick to start there. You got Bagley, who I think was a good signing. You waive Rashawn Holmes. You re-up Vucevic on that two-way deal. So I think in the beginning of the season, you'll see Tristan play a lot more or spend a lot more time with a go-go in the G League, and you'll kind of have a two-center rotation of Sarr and Bagley. And obviously, if unfortunately an injury occurs at the center position, you have Tristan who can come up and give you a spell, give you some minutes at that spot. Maybe you can sign someone else to an Exhibit 10. But the Wizards have a thin center rotation, but I think it works for them. You know, Sarr's going to play a heavy amount of minutes, probably around 30 plus a night. You'll have Bagley that can come in here, you know, and give you around 12 to 15 off the bench. And that's kind of going to be your center tandem, that little rotation there. But I'm it's not rocket science. I'm not saying anything nobody knows with the fact that I think Sarr will start at center. So that's kind of the consensus four out of the five starters. I think based on what I've seen from Wizards Twitter as well and Wizards fans, most are aligned in that. The only caveat being something Trey Johnson should start over McCollum. And I think they think he should start, not that's what they think will happen. I think they want that to happen. But I think the more rational people would probably side with McCollum starting, at least from the beginning, over Trey Johnson. Not to say that Johnson won't play big minutes, but I think that'll at least be how Keith starts with his rotations. Now getting to the other forward position. And that's going to be a pretty interesting discussion between Bilal Coulibaly, who the Wizards took 7th overall in 2023, and Keyshawn George, who the Wizards traded up to take 24th in 2024. Both offer a pretty similar skill set on the defensive end. I think Bilal can defend guards a little bit better than George can. I think George can defend bigger forwards and wings a little bit better than maybe Bilal can. So I think both have their perks defensively. Both are pretty lockdown defenders considering their age and kind of how they've played. And also both have struggled defending without fouling. George a little more so than Coulibaly. But again, they do have their deficiencies on the defensive end. They're by no means finished products there. But for their age, I think they're pretty good defenders and certainly guys that are capable of, you know, not locking down the opposing team's best player, but certainly, you know, Washington feel like comfortable putting them on the opposing team's best player and saying, hey, do everything you can to make this night pretty difficult on them. They might get their buckets, but they've got to make it as difficult as possible. And I think both of those guys in George and Coulibaly, you know, Brian Keefe would be comfortable with doing that in the starting lineup because whoever starts between them, I think, will be your 1A defender to take away the opposing team's 1A score. You know, if they play a team like Minnesota, you know, you're probably sticking Bilal Coulibaly on Anthony Edwards. We've seen them do that with opposing guards as well. But likewise, you know, when Keyshawn was starting and Bilal was out, you had Keyshawn, you know, defending some other opposing forwards. You know, they had no fear putting him on guys like LeBron. They had no fear putting him on guys like Kevin Durant. And so, you know, I think both have their perks on the defensive end. And if you're looking for more offense, like I think Keyshawn has the slight edge there in terms of being a much better shooter. And Keyshawn by no means is a knockdown three-point shooter, but I think certainly much more respectable and confident shooter than Bilal. I like Bilal's ability to get to the lane. I like his first step. I like his athleticism a little bit more than maybe I do with Keyshawn in terms of his shot creation. But at the same time, like if you're looking for offense, I'm probably looking for more spacing too in that starting five. And George gives it to me. So if you're listening to me, you're probably like, oh, well, Greg's probably going to say that Keyshawn will start at the three. It's not where I'm going to go. And the reason for that is because, you know, Bilal appeared in just 59 games last year. He also started all 59 of those games. So I think it's pretty clear that they like him as that starter that can, you know, you can stick as your 1A defender on the opposing team's top scorer. Again, it's also year two for George. Like it's further along, things change, but I'm gonna base it off of that, based off the fact that they did like him in that starting lineup every single time he was healthy and available to play last year. I don't know if anything would really be different this year. Obviously, training camp can change that, but this is a projection in late July. And I'll circle back to these projections later on, I'm sure, before opening night, but honestly, that's why I'd side with Bilal. Maybe a little bit more experience too. And we'll see if that jumper really does make strides. Like I think it really needs to this upcoming season. But based on that, it's the same logic with Middleton. Like every single chance they had to start, they started. I don't know what would really change entering this year unless you see dramatic leaps from some guys behind them that just say, hey, we simply have to go with him because he's just the better player as of now. Maybe. But based on that, I would put Bilal and Middleton as your two forwards there, with George obviously as a candidate to possibly, you know, enter the starting lineup at that point. Now that leads me to kind of the second batch I have here of players. There's five in the starting lineup, obviously, and then I got five here in this category that I've labeled rotation pieces. And those guys are Corey Kispert, Cam Whitmore, Trey Johnson, Keyshawn George, and Marvin Bagley. I'll start with Bagley because I touched on him a little bit earlier. He's the easiest of this rotation pieces group. He'll be the tandem with Sar. He'll back him up, play a couple minutes, 12 to 15 per night, and obviously be, I think, a pretty viable backup as we saw in the limited amount of time that he did play with the Wizards the last two seasons before being traded to Memphis. And I should say, like, the rotation pieces does not mean that these five guys are always going to come off the bench for Washington. We've notoriously seen with Keith, especially last season, I probably looked at 50 to 60 games and I tried to like limit it to non-blowouts, which is pretty difficult for this Wizards team that obviously lost 64 games, a lot of those by double digits, because you see the rotations kind of fall apart in those games with, you know, some of the starters don't play a lot because it's just out of hand, and some of the bench players play a lot more. So I try to limit it to at least somewhat competitive games through 3 to 4 quarters. So that's why the sample size isn't 82 games. But for the most part, Keith played 8 to 9 man rotations. It was pretty rare for it to be a solid 10 man rotation where you have 10 guys that are playing, you know, 10 to 15 plus minutes on a singular night. That was pretty rare. So I think Keith will probably limit it to a 9 man rotation if I had to guess. Obviously, there's five guys in this, so one might be the odd man out on some nights, but I just don't think that'll be Bagley unless they go very small. They did it a couple times last year, but Bagley, I think, certainly will be a part of that 9 man rotation. I'd argue certainly for Trey Johnson and Keyshawn George as well. Johnson alone on his production in Summer League, his number 6 overall pick, I think this team needs scoring desperately. He provides that. I think he's NBA ready. So for all of those reasons, I think he should be a part of it. I kind of outlined for Keyshawn George. I don't want to harp on it too much, but if I think that he is a viable option to start at the forward position, Obviously, I think he's got to be a lock to be a part of your nine-man rotation. And again, that's not me making some bold prediction, just kind of me discussing. You know, I just kind of hyped him up to possibly start, so he'll be a part of that rotation as well. So I think George, Trey Johnson, and Bagley, I'd be pretty confident in playing, you know, pretty good minutes off the bench to begin the season. And then it comes down to two guys that are a little bit more of the veterans of this bunch, apart from Bagley, and that's Corey Kispert and that's Cam Whitmore. Now, Kispert played a lot last year. He was kind of their de facto sixth man coming off the bench. I would be surprised if he's not part of the rotation. Again, the first of a four-year extension kicks in. He's making around $13 million, a pretty good contract. Didn't have the best year shooting the ball last year at about 35%. Would like to see that, you know, way closer to the 40s, maybe even a little bit higher than 40%. But he did showcase an ability to put the ball on the deck. I thought he was a pretty good and efficient driver when going to the rim. Was able to hold his own offensively outside of just shooting, especially even when his shot wasn't falling. So I did like that he's expanded his overall arsenal of moves in his offensive bag. Defensively, still not great. Never really projected to be a great defender in the league. I don't necessarily think that his defense is going to get that much better. Maybe not even worse than it is now. It's just he's not a great defender. You can't really go into the season expecting him to be. What you can hope is that he makes up for it with his expanded offensive game, shoots a little better from three-point range. And so I think he'll be a part of this rotation for sure. It's possible that he's a trade candidate. And I've seen his name come up in Wizards Twitter as a trade candidate. I should say I have not seen anything reporting-wise to suggest that he is on the trade block. But based on context clues and not drafted by Dawkins, sure, it would make sense, I guess, if they could get something for him. But I would, you know, expect him to enter the season on the Wizards roster and be part of the rotation. And that kind of leaves the last guy in Cam Whitmore. And I certainly do think that Whitmore should be part of the rotation. They traded for him for a reason. I think he offers a lot more defensively than Corey Kispert in terms of switchability, in terms of obviously he had a couple big games with some blocks and his ability to get in passing lanes. Like, not by all means, not an elite defender, but certainly, as you can tell, a better defender than Kispert, more versatile on that end as well, being able to defend multiple positions. Offensively, you know, I do like the potential that Whitmore has on the offensive end. He obviously shot the ball well at times last year in his limited role with Houston, but maybe it's between the two. Again, it's just so hard to predict because this team is very deep, and deep doesn't always mean that there's so much talent that, you know, it's really hard to decipher it. It's not that. It's not like they're a contending team and there's just like an OKC where there's just not enough minutes to go around. They have a lot of guys that are trying to find their way and a lot of guys that are on the same development pathway. And it's going to be hard to, I guess, find all of them minutes, especially early on in the season. And that's kind of another theme of this pod is to kind of showcase that some of your favorite players on this team, it's going to be pretty difficult to find them minutes early on, you know? So unless Keith goes with a 10 man rotation, you know, you're looking at one of George Johnson, George Trey Johnson, Cam Whitmore and Corey Kispert possibly not playing some nights. Again, I don't mention Marvin Bagley because I just think that he's going to be pretty much an everyday backup to Sar, especially with the limited amount of size Washington has down low. But certainly would be interesting to see which of those guys that I listed, you know, is the odd man out. And maybe they go 10 deep. Keith hasn't done it too much. I doubt that he will do it. But that's a good problem, I guess, to have if you're the Wizards and you're Keith. Like, you have a lot of talented guys that you want to see get minutes early. It just might not work out that way. So that's kind of that second tier of the roster in terms of possible rotation pieces. The next batch is entitled Fringe Rotation. That means that as of now, I'd view them on the outside looking in on the rotation, but could certainly see at some point in the season, even early on, them getting some minutes over some of the guys that I labeled rotation pieces. And that encompasses three guys: Justin Champagne, AJ Johnson, and Will Riley. It's going to be pretty difficult, I think, for Will Riley to see the floor early on. He's very raw and, you know, still a young player. I believe he's like, 6'8 and 186 was his measurements at the combine. So needs to add some strength, some muscle as well. you know, I think the potential is there, but he's just behind a lot more developed and talented wings at this stage of their careers. And like I said, I think the Wizards are going to put together the best possible rotation early in the season, even if wins aren't at the forefront of their mind. So I just think early in the year, it might be a little difficult for Riley to crack the rotation. AJ Johnson's a more interesting discussion because the Wizards do, obviously, without Smart now on the roster, have a bit of an opening if they want to go with a more traditional backup point guard. And by no means do I think AJ Johnson is a traditional point guard. I've been on record multiple times urging Wizards fans to ease it with the hype about Johnson being a point guard. I think I like his speed in transition. I like his ability to run the break. I think he's a little bit too selfish sometimes on the break. And I think he plays with a scorer's mindset, which is okay. Like, it's fine if he is a scoring two guard. That's completely okay. He's showing the ability to shoot the ball from three as well. So I don't necessarily know if the Wizards even view him as a possible solution at point guard to back up Bub, if that is the case. So I don't know if it's just as simple as Smart got bought out. The Wizards need a guard to spell Carrington. They go with Johnson as the backup point guard. You know, a lot of times they didn't really play a backup point guard to Jordan Poole. You know, Bub Carrington would maybe come in and play a little bit of the lead guard, but sometimes they would just kind of have when they had Kuzma as well, he would, I think, take more of a point forward responsibility. And so that maybe was more of a unique situation. But I don't know if AJ Johnson plays much early on. Like, I could very well see them going with Bub and CJ to start, you know, having Trey Johnson come in as your other guard to spell one of them. And maybe he takes out Bub and CJ, who's been, you know, able to in years past distribute and kind of run an offense. Maybe he takes over as your primary ball handler and initiator. I'm not sure. But we see, you know, when I was doing my research, looking back into the rotations that Keefe had, I did see a couple times where there was really only one guard coming off the bench, and that guard wasn't a traditional point guard. So again, that's possible. You have Kispert that I view as more of a wing, but maybe you view him as a two guard. I'm not sure, but it just seems like AJ Johnson could be one of the guys that doesn't play as much early on. Justin Champagne's the other guy I've listed there as a fringe rotation, which sucks because I felt that he was, over the last 10 games, Washington's best player, you know, walking double-double in those games, really efficient from the field, from three-point range, solid, switchable defender. You know, I'd really like to see him play. He's on a great deal. He's making only, you know, under $3 million this year. It's non-guaranteed, but I'm sure they'll guarantee it at some point. I really do like Champagne. My issue here is, do I see the Wizards actually playing him over Keyshawn George? I don't. Over Cam Whitmore, over Corey Kispert, like, maybe, but then you have some other guys like Kispert and Whitmore that aren't playing. And so, you know, I struggled with maybe putting Justin Champagne in the rotation pieces, but I decided to go with fringe rotation because I, you know, when the Wizards were fully healthy to begin last year, Champagne really didn't play much. He kind of emerged when they had a lot of injuries. They made some moves at the deadline, and there were just openings for him to start a lot of games down the stretch. He made the most of it as well, got rewarded with that contract. But I certainly would be surprised if he was part of the 8-9-man rotation to begin the season. Great player, though. And so that's kind of those fringe rotation guys. It's going to be a little bit difficult, certainly, for the Wizards to find minutes for all of them. You might not see much of Will Riley and AJ Johnson to begin the season, but I think, you know, unfortunately, I should say injuries happen. The Wizards have, you know, had to deal with their fair share the last couple of years, which sucks. But it has opened up minutes, like I mentioned, for Champagne as a starter. Opened up minutes for Bub Carrington to get some run at the one. Obviously, for Bilal Coulibaly after the deadline and all that, to play enough on-ball minutes to get a triple-double. So you'll see a lot of these guys that might not be part of the rotation early, you know, emerge as possible starters later in the year when some guys are traded and folded out of the rotation slowly. There's obviously, unfortunately, injuries. So again, I will note that, like, while this is kind of my prediction, it's by no means final. And if a guy isn't playing early in the beginning of the season, it's possible that they're playing a lot of minutes towards the end. So just wanted to make note of that. And then the last batch, well, there's two more, I guess. There's the 14th/15th man. I got Dylan Jones there and Malachi Branham interchangeably, obviously, as the 14th, 15th man. I just don't see Washington playing them that much. Again, these are guys they traded for. They didn't draft them on their own. They were kind of throw-ins. I think the main point of acquiring both of them was to get another second-round pick and dump a salary that they necessarily want in Kelly Olynyk and obviously in Colby Jones as well. So I'm not sure what their plan is. They could also be waived. Like, obviously, Wesley, who was also in that trade with Brandon Mass for a buyout, so that's a little bit different. They didn't just decide to move on from him. I think that was both sides agreeing to it. But you never know. Like, Dylan Jones had a good last summer league game that kind of saved him. But before that, he wasn't good really at all. Brandon didn't play summer league, obviously. And so production has declined. And that's a role in declining as well, with more talent in San Antonio the last couple years for Brandon. But I do like him as a piece. I like Dylan Jones as a piece. I just don't see them as options to crack the rotation early on, especially over some of Washington's draft picks that they took on their own, in addition to some of the veterans that I'm sure they'd like to play up that trade value as well. So that's kind of it. And then I wanted to also highlight the two-way guys, because I knew I'd get comments like, well, you don't think Tristan Vukcevic will be part of the rotation? Like, Jameer Watkins is a great summer league. Greg, where is he? They're going to be playing a lot in the G League as well. Obviously, Jalen Martin is listed as that third two-way slot. I think at least to begin the year, we see a lot with two-way guys. Like, they're not used. They only have 50 games maximum on the active NBA roster. I think the Wizards will use that strategically, maybe when they need one of them to come up and give some minutes due to an injury or due to obviously trades and stuff like that. So I don't think you'll see too much of Vukcevic and Watkins early on, Martin too, to begin the season as part of that rotation, but certainly can be called up at another point. I did want, and that's kind of going to wrap it up, obviously, if you guys have any comments about the depth chart that I've provided, some of the rotation comments that I've made, feel free to use the comments to let me know. I did also want to mention before I let you guys go, the details on the Smart and Wesley buyouts. Marcus Smart gave back $6.8 million to Washington in order to sign that deal with LA, where he'll be making $5.1 million in the first year. So I honestly gave back a decent bit of money. I thought it would be around $5 million in Washington. It turns out to be closer to $7 million. That is a little bit more of space for the Wizards, obviously, if they want to take back more contracts at the deadline, hopefully expiring contracts, to keep 2026 cap space open. But obviously to take back some more draft capital as well, that's a help. And then Wesley gave back, I believe, $1.4 million and recently – actually today signed a one-year deal with Portland. So like I mentioned then, a lot of people were kind of questioning why would they buy him out. I think it was more so because Wesley didn't view himself as part of this future roster. Maybe the Wizards told him that they didn't view him as part of it. And they said, hey, let's work on a buyout, get you released early on or on the earlier side of the summer. And so that way you can go find a new team, be with them for training camp and all that. And so he signs with Portland. So good for Wesley. Smart obviously signs a two-year deal with LA, and the Wizards recoup a total of $8.2 million back in those buyouts. So that's going to kind of wrap it up for this episode. Again, the next thing you can probably look forward to is the schedule release. As sad as that might sound, that's kind of the next thing on the agenda. Sar and Koulibaly could be playing in Eurobasket in September or August as well. So that could also be the case, that you're looking forward to some of those games. But other than that, it's kind of slim pickings. This is kind of the second dead period of the offseason, late July, all of August, really, and most of September until media day and training camp really ramp up. So I'm going to try to find some good content. This is one that I've been eyeing for a while. So I wanted to get my thoughts on that. If you have any content ideas, if you have anything that you want me to discuss, maybe I'll do a mailbag episode. You guys seem to like those. Maybe I'll do one of those in the near future. But definitely let me know in the comments below. But that's going to do it for this episode. Again, thank you guys for tuning in. The sport's been great as always. If you liked what I said about the rotations, let me know. And if you didn't like what I said, feel free to articulate in the comments. Always nice going back and forth with you guys. But that's going to wrap up for this episode of the Wizards Podcast. Thanks for listening as always, guys. Go Wiz.